Welcome to the Atom Ventures podcast. My name is Bharat Patel. I'm Managing Director of Atom Ventures and Atom CTO. And today I'm here with Sachin Pabari from Touch. Say hello, Sachin.
Hi, Bharat, and hi, audience. Thanks for having me, Bharat.
It's a pleasure. So we're going to talk about Touch, so the fastest way to manage CRM. We're going to talk about a little bit about your entrepreneur journey. And one of the key things I really want to focus on is your MVP, because you've just launched. And it'd be great to understand a little bit about your MVP experience, how things have gone there. So Sachin, you were a derivatives trader. What made you decide to become a lowly entrepreneur, starving and working all hours? How did you start that journey?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Effectively, I was a trader for about 14 years, and towards the back end of my career, the markets had really changed. I traded interest rate derivatives, and there was a sort of race to zero interest rates, which meant volatility was sucked out of markets, and the same opportunities weren't there. And I had this sort of itch to build some value in the world outside of, you know, sitting in front of the screen and analyzing numbers and you know, which way certain stocks or bonds were going to go. So that was the itch that was there, really. And you know, that was. Once that came about, I started up my first company, which was Certain Capital Management. And that was a investment management firm that sold structured notes to individual investors. That was the first leap into sort of being an entrepreneur, really.
So how did you get into CRM? Because this is obviously a world away from trading, or is it?
You're right in some ways, but then, you know, salespeople and traders are very much similar folk. We're both front of line, very high failure rate. You know, speed of execution is extremely important to both of us as well. So there's a lot of similarities. But after sort of working on Certain Capital for 4 years and leading the sales process there. So I was obviously using the CRM on a daily basis, and that was when the sort of first frustration started to hit, you know, how poor of an experience it was. But then also my network was sort of full of salespeople as well. So I launched my second business, which was called Livia, and that spawned from an idea which really from listening to other salespeople about the pain they had in terms of responding back to customers as fast as possible. Effectively, you know, most inquiries are being generated online and out of hours when the sales team were home. So I decided to build a product called Livia, which helped sales teams respond back to leads as fast as possible. So within 2 minutes, 24/7, with a real support agent in order to qualify them and sort of keep them warm for the sales team the day after.
So what does Touch do?
Yeah, so you know, from my time speaking to tons of salespeople, I found out that salespeople hate the CRM, and effectively, you know, they end up working outside of the CRM in the apps they love, and then have to duplicate that data back to the CRM, and you know, the experience is extremely slow and poor in terms of navigation and workflows. So what Touch does, it sits over the top of the CRM. It's effectively the front end for your CRM built specifically for a salesperson, and it enables super fast workflows. The way that this happens is, first of all, there's a command palette to execute actions or workflows. So rather than having to point and click using your mouse, you would just type using natural language into a command palette, much like a dev in their IDE. And then the command palette teaches you to adopt keyboard shortcuts. So the more you use the command palette, the faster you become because you adopt those keyboard shortcuts. Then, secondly, the sort of speed is created by integrating multiple channels of communication into a single thread. Increasingly, sort of all businesses have to communicate with customers over multiple channels. That tends to mean that there's multiple tabs open. So we've integrated several channels into one single thread. And then finally, we have the command palette accessible in any tab using a Chrome extension. So the CRM is effectively only ever one touch away. That's Touch.
This is very interesting because this is a SaaS platform, isn't it?
That's correct. Yeah, it's a SaaS platform. I mean, another very simple way of describing it, maybe easy to parse if you're a superhuman user or if any of the audience are, it's effectively superhuman for CRM workflows. So.
It's very interesting, actually, because we, years ago in a different life, we were building CRM systems. And so that the whole idea of actually not just workflows, but being able to search for commands and actually do things easily via keyboard was one of the main things, because people didn't want to click around a lot, right? And go between different screens because they wanted to have everything in one place. So this is a very, very interesting idea. So obviously you've put a lot of thought into what you wanted to build. Can you talk a little bit about the build process? How did you go about finding developers, or did you have a co-founder that was technical? How did you go about the whole MVP process?
Yes, we had an existing team that was in place from Olivia that sort of migrated to Touch. So my co-founder, Hisan, he's the CTO, sort of Techstars alumni, and was a developer at Deutsche Bank and a couple of other startups as well. So Will, our CPO, is, you know, fairly technical as well, and do some front-end coding as well. So we had a technical team. But in terms of the process, really, it was like, look, we had a set of assumptions, and before we wrote any line of code, we decided to do customer interviews. So we had five sort of core assumptions which we wanted to test, and we did, you know, hustled around to get as many interviews as possible. And over a period of 6 months, we did possibly 70 interviews, and you know, we still carried on with that process. So, and that helped us to really feel confident that, first of all, that CRM is a painful experience. It needs to be solved. And secondly, you know, the command palette would be adopted. And, you know, the multiple channels of communication in one single thread is something that would solve a big pain point. So, you know, that was the customer interviews was the process really to that.
So how much did your idea change from the initial, obviously, formation of the idea to what you see today? How many iterations did you go through?
Yeah. It's dramatically. So initially we started off the first build, the first version of Touch was just multi-channel communication sitting on top of the CRM, as we felt that was sort of the main problem. But the more we did customer interviews, the more we found out it was actually the admin, you know, the management of the CRM, which was the biggest pain. And I think a part of it is psychological, because, you know, it's so boring to do that you're always going to hate doing that work. And another part was that, you know, the CRM was just always built for management. Hence, you know, it's like a typical sort of reporting tool and not built for the end user to sort of, you know, dance through their pages and sort of complete simple data entry. So that's how it changed. It changed from multi-channel communication to first us tackling the admin side of the CRM. And then secondly, you know, then layering on top of that, the multi-channel communication. So
how did you, I mean, obviously you're the non-technical founder. So how did you communicate with the technical team? I know that you obviously worked with them previously, so I would suspect you carried forward some of those working practices, but generally, you know, how did you go through this iteration process? Because oftentimes, you know, developers do get frustrated if they are told to do one thing and then the next day they tell, well, actually, no, that's not what we need. We need this now, something else. So how did you get through that?
I mean, having a CPO was a crucial decision. So Will actually, his CPO was the head of growth before, but we felt we needed someone sort of, you know, to take the feedback and, you know, turn it into product cards and us vote on those. And effectively that's what it was. It was turning feedback into potential, you know, feature ideas. And then it was a voting process in terms of, what we felt would sort of would deliver the most value, but, you know, and sort of deliver on solving the biggest pain points according to our assumptions. So that was how we went about it. And yeah, I mean, I think because we'd worked together and, you know, we had always had a process in place, you know, we use Trello and have a roadmap on there and tickets created and user stories. And it was just carrying on as was, really, to be honest. So
that's always an advantage, right? When you guys all know each other. From your perspective, what were the kind of biggest challenges you faced to try and get this to product to market?
So there was lots of challenges. One, you know, we had an existing company called Olivia, and, you know, we had to essentially set up a new entity, and, you know, having those sort of negotiations, conversations with the existing shareholders to, you know, effectively take a haircut so we could start a new company. That was particularly challenging for myself as the CEO, because I was the CEO of one company and now the CEO of another one. So yeah, you know, you don't really like to, you know, let people down. And I think all investors, especially sort of smaller investors, you know, sometimes they're not as understanding as, you know, not what they should be, but yeah, just an issue when you tell them, it's not sort of that understanding. So that was difficult. The second thing was obviously no funding. So, you know, living on savings and persevering and staying determined while effectively there was no money coming in, you know, so that was probably the biggest challenge. And then it's, I think really the biggest challenge was, you know, the co-founding team to navigate through this without any casualties. And I think that's been a real sort of plus point for us because, you know, there's been some tricky times, but we've managed to get over it. And I think we've come out much, much stronger on the other side. So yeah.
So obviously when you're bootstrapping, there's obviously huge amounts of pressure really on delivery and getting to market, right? So did you guys set yourselves realistic targets and goals, or how did you plan out that roadmap to get live?
Yeah, especially from my wife, there was definitely pressure from her. So we planned out, you know, we'd always work sort of to 3 month objectives. And the way we worked was that, you know, the first 3 months were customer interviews. The second 3 months were building prototypes in Figma and Envision, to be able to display to customers to validate that, you know, this is something they would use. The next 3 months was getting to, you know, a working version of the product, which, you know, to be brutally honest, was like totally embarrassing, but, you know, it was fine. Like it was used, and we actually retained a few active users. So, which was totally shocking to me, to be honest. And then, you know, the next 3 month objectives, which take us to now, is, to getting our sort of first paid customers. And yeah, and that's the way we moved through the process really. And we'll continue with that, I think, until we get to our seed round, and then we'll sort of put in more sort of longer term objectives.
Have you been using any external help? Have you been with any accelerators or incubators, or have you taken on any advisors?
We've got a fantastic advisor, Alvaro. So he was the ex director of product at Facebook, and he's now VP of search at Depop. And, you know, he's a product guide really. And I think that was essential, you know, going from customer interviews, validating assumptions to getting to a working product. So, you know, that was the advisor I wanted. I wanted, you know, a product advisor. He's also helped with investor introductions and a whole heap of other things. But yeah, I mean, you know, having that advisor there was crucial. And then, we haven't gone for an incubator, or accelerator, although we are in the next round of Techstars. So we would probably accept them if, you know, if we got offered. I think we're quite seasoned. Kisan, my CTO, has worked on 2 startups. You know, I've had Olivia before and had my own, you know, financial investment management business. So, you know, I accelerators and incubators are great, but I feel like, you know, we want to make sure that if we go to somewhere, it really adds a heap of value. There's a big mentor network, and the signal to the market as well, is extremely important. So, you know, something like Techstars or YC fits that bill well.
So obviously you founded Livy before. What lessons do you take from that when starting Touch?
So it's quite funny. It's like, you know, with Olivia, I was very much like the hustle is all that matters. And you know, I'm a trader, salesperson, and that comes naturally to me. And, you know, getting to zero to one in terms of like the first paying customer, you know, hustle and grit is a big factor in that. But I think, you know, what I learned from Olivia is that, you know, our product is much more complex and also, you know, has to create an astounding experience, for the end user. So therefore you have to be much more intentional about your decisions around product. So therefore the process becomes extremely, extremely important. And yeah, and just make sure we don't run away with making knee-jerk decisions as well. So I think, you know, that's what I learned. I mean, in particular, like during Olivia, we went through lockdown, you know, just before lockdown, we grew about 1200% the year before. And, we lost about 85% of our revenue once, you know, lockdown happened, because sure, the sector we serviced most was the property sector. And, you know, I think I've learned now to pause for breath and not make a decision so quickly, you know, just to, you know, don't react, take your time, basically. Which is, like I said, polar opposite to sort of the initial attitude which I had, which was all about hustle and getting things done. So,
Did that experience with Olivia and obviously losing the client base feed into this, in the sense that this is more B2B, right? So it will hit any down, it'll ride through downturns much more easily, given its CRM and its
I think the reason why it will, like, so we were heavily, you know, we're vertical specific, or sorry, sector specific, so we were, you know, focused on the property sector. Here we're sort of, you know, sector agnostic. So, and, you know, especially because COVID has sort of accelerated the need for businesses to use SaaS and cloud products, and, you know, CRMs being the most popular one. So yeah, so I think that sort of definitely future proofs us against any type of unforeseen shock, I hope.
The wonderful thing about having a business is you never know, right? It's where every day, yeah. One day you're running like smoothly, and the next day something just hits you like as a train, or someone showers you with cash, and then everything is bright and sunny. So it's
swings and roundabouts, isn't it? So.
Always. So you're about to launch. So I know that you have an integration with the Pipedrive, right? So let's talk about the launch. So what are the successes so far? You're basically ready to go with your first set of pilot customers. You said you've got great feedback from users, and you already have a couple of customers. What are the achievements so far?
Yeah, so we launched a private beta about 7 weeks ago, and we had 25 users come on and start using the product, of which we've retained several of them as weekly active. So they are logging into Touch and not logging into Pipedrive to complete their workflows. From speaking with them, it turns out that, you know, there's somewhere between a 40 to 50% time saving in terms of their admin, you know, time throughout the week. So yeah, it's awesome to hear. And then, you know, I think that one of the most like pleasing data points is to see the trend in their keyboard usage over time as well. So we can see a definite trend as somebody's using the command palette more, they are transitioning from, you know, natural language to execute commands to using the keyboard shortcuts. So yeah, it's super exciting. And you know, from the feedback from that initial group of customers, that's led us to sort of like version 2, which is released in a couple of weeks' time. And, you know, we've already got, you know, 30 to 35 onboarding sessions set up with new users, and we'll be transitioning to paid. So yeah, it's a really exciting time. And yeah, I think there's loads of challenges ahead, but I definitely think we've at least validated that someone out there finds the product useful and will not log into their CRM again, which is, you know, a big yay from us. So.
Yeah. I mean, 40 to 50% savings is huge, right? I mean, that's massive. So, you've mentioned that you're going to try and convert people from, free to paid. That is one of the most notoriously difficult things to do. You know, SaaS platform is getting people off the free to paid. So what kind of strategy have you got there? And then how, as you launch, what date will you be launching out? Or do you have a kind of date in mind to launch fully? And what kind of subscription levels will you have, et cetera?
So yeah, free to paid is notoriously difficult, but we have an onboarding experience. So every user is onboarded firsthand by myself or CPO. And during that experience, what we've learned is that we will allow the user to use Touch first, you know, like live in front of us, and we guide them through the product. And we believe that that onboarding experience will be crucial to converting users to, you know, to be paid straight away rather than sort of having the free trial. So the free trial is only really in place because we're just trying to sort of gather data right now. So yeah, so that's the approach for that. We also believe that, look, you know, we're a take it or leave it product right now. We're almost building for an edge case type of user, and we don't want to sort of pander and, you know, fit to people who don't sort of fit into our customer profile. So we, you know, we think that the right customer will pay for us, and it's just a case of finding them. So yeah.
What is a customer profile?
So the customer profile is somebody who is managing circa 30 deals a day or 30 leads a day or more. That uses a couple of channels plus of communication. That is doing somewhere between an hour to 2 hours of time in their CRM, heavily based around admin, and also is activities first. So very much setting activities on their deals or their contacts and, you know, will work from that sort of, you know, focused task list in order to, you know, have a very structured process. So that's the type of user we fit most. Yeah. I mean, the type of business that we've been engaging has been sort of from the tech sector, you know, between sort of 10 to 30 salespeople. And, you know, I guess they're kind of used to, or they are aware of the command palette and, you know, they speak to their devs. So they're somewhat, you know, have a technical interest at least. So adopting the command palette seems much easier.
So how did you settle on a go-to-market strategy? Because obviously, again, part of this marketing, your own sales and lead funnels need to be created. So how are you doing that?
Yeah. So we haven't set an official launch date. In fact, we're hoping that we don't have to set an official launch date. The strategy very much is we have a traditional funnel in place, which seems to be working quite well. Our product centers on the concept of flow and, you know, essentially, you know, what are the conditions that puts a person into a state of flow while they're using a product? And we've, you know, our CPO has read over 200 papers and I've read over 20 papers, which has helped us to build this model, and this flow assessment for any user, to use and sort of figure out whether while they're selling or they're doing their job, are they in a state of flow? Turns out that assessment has become quite a valuable tool, and we're converting leads from people who are sort of taking that assessment at a rate of sort of 25%, people who are visiting the landing page. So that's a good funnel that we can build on there. We're also working heavily on SEO. So we want to, we feel like the concepts of flow, deep work, hyper focus will really start entering the workplace. And I think it's something that salespeople will see as, you know, one of the extra tools in their artillery in order to be a better salesperson. So our articles are very much centered around, you know, our content is centered around those keywords. And we are, you know, trying to get third party coverage and, you know, high authority sites as well and do podcasts such as this around those subject matters. So that's another part of that. And then, you know, those are sort of more the traditional go to market strategies. But then, you know, once we have a critical mass of users, then everything is product led growth. So, you know, the aim is because we have outbound communication through touch, emails that are sent via touch will be appended with sent via touch. Calendar invites that are created through touch will also be appended with created via touch. So that will allow us, especially for B2B, to sort of scale to other salespeople. Then we have a waiting list strategy where you have to request access and we won't onboard a user that doesn't fit our customer profile. This has helped us to build quite a large waiting list now. And the great thing about that waiting list is it's not a just collect an email waiting list. It's a they've completed an onboarding form waiting list. So we know what features or CRM will unlock certain parts of that waiting list, which is why I hinted at the point that we, you know, we don't feel like we'd need to launch if we can keep building that waiting list and, you know, and just sort of unlock that really. So those are sort of the sort of two product led growth strategies that we have. And yeah, I guess finally, you know, we've started to see in a couple of businesses, the first user that has adopted touch, you know, invite another user from a business. It's happened in one business, you know, a software development company called Mahara. And so they've started to invite other users within the organization. So yeah, we expect some sort of internal virality there as well.
It's interesting this because you're not going through a traditional big bang approach of here's the marketing, here's the pay-per-click. This is the, so you've got the SEO, you've got your digital advertising, paid advertising, and then obviously speaker circuits and those kinds of things. It sounds to me more like it's a value-based, needs-based approach where you're actually creating a need through the initial value you're ringing through that assessment, and then people are seeing that value and then signing up, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, and like with the next tool we built is a 28-day flow focus and habit coaching SMS campaign. So, you know, you could sign up and we give you 28 days of free coaching in order to get yourself, you know, into that state of flow more regularly, nurture better habits and sort of be intentional about your focus throughout the day.
Yeah, I definitely think this is a good topic for a future podcast. And we should definitely touch on this because I think this is one of the biggest problems with people working from home, right? Is the ability to stay focused on one thing. So I'd definitely like to explore that. But my next question really is around growth. What's your plans for growth? Because obviously now that it's not big bang, go launch, spend lots of money on marketing, whoop-de-woo, it looks like you're going on a very measured basis. Are you looking at how will growth happen? Are you adding on new CRMs, looking to different territories, international markets? What does it look like?
Yeah. So firstly, it will be, you know, scale through pipe drive using some of the levers that I mentioned already. So, you know, some of the outbound messaging, internal referral, and building that waiting list. We will do ads as well, just to get that sort of critical mass of users. But we're expecting it to be a temporary one-off hit rather than, you know, continue ads. Then in terms of future growth, you know, we are targeting HubSpot and Salesforce as new CRMs, which obviously opens up different markets to us. So that's the approach there. And then as the feature set increases, you know, we expect that there's more types of users that we can tackle as well. So you know, the market size increases and, you know, the potential for growth increases as we move to different CRMs.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I mean, I know some companies that are organically growing straight just through the marketplaces that are there on places like HubSpot, which are great. And it's, of course, you have to get rated and reviewed on there. But once you do, it does seem to generate good growth.
Yeah, we've been very careful about the pipe. So we're on the pipe drive marketplace, but we're private right now because, like you said, with the reviews, it's extremely important that, like, we're at a stage where we're delighting every user before we, you know, make that public. So
you mentioned a seed round. Are you raising money at the moment? We did talk about investor conversations. How much are you raising? What will you do with the money? Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, so we're fundraising our pre-seed round right now, and so it's a 400k pre-seed round, pre-money valuation of 2 million. The round is being led by Tim Dempsey of Epiphany Capital, so that's already transacted on a portion of that round, and we've got about 70% committed now, with about 30% transacted on, so there's about 30% to go. We expect to sort of tie that up by, you know, end of July. So that will be the pre-seed round. Then, you know, what we're doing with that money is we'll be hiring ahead of growth, as we were just talking about growth, because we believe that the, you know, pulling on those levers, those product levers, are going to be extremely important. And also the onboarding experience, which is effectively the aha moment where somebody can experience firsthand whether they can adopt a command palette and keyboard shortcut. So they'll be working heavily on that. As well as some of the other growth initiatives that I mentioned. And then also on top of that, we'll be hiring a full-time front-end developer. And if we can stretch to it, probably a freelancer, but a good designer, because design is extremely important in that experience. So you know, most of the funding will be going towards hiring. And that's the plans for this round.
So obviously we met through the other ship, which is I guess the co-working space thing. But there's lots and lots of different entrepreneurs on there. And I'm sure a few of them will listen to this. What's your advice to them? Now, obviously you're a serial entrepreneur now. I think we can badge you with that. What's your advice to them if they're looking to start out and start building their product and going to market?
Yeah. I'd prefer like two-time entrepreneur rather than some reason serial entrepreneur to me had like a negative connotation, but yeah, I mean, each their own. Yeah, my advice to them is really about building the right team, to be honest. Like, I know it sounds very cliche, but I think that's just so, as I mentioned, the challenges that we had sort of transitioning from Olivia to Touch. You know, if it wasn't for the fact that I think I chose well with those team, you know, with those co-founders. I think another, you know, makeup of a team would have definitely broken up. And I think that is the number one reason for the early stage startups failing as well. So yeah, you know, make sure always asking, are you working with the right people? And a good question to ask is, would I work for this person? Like, is he that good? Do I trust him that much? Do I get on with him that well that I would work for him? And when I ask myself that question, I say yes to both my co-founders. So
I know some investors who basically say they only invest in companies where they'd have a beer with the founders, right? And so yeah. I guess we work for people and we invest in people, right? So I guess the key thing is that it's got to be that right vibe and connection.
I mean, you may as well forget the whole investment process. To me, you could just shorten it down to that, to be honest. So
it's true. All right. So Sachin, how do people get in touch with you? If someone's interested in learning more, getting involved with Touch, giving you some money, how do they do that?
Yeah. So you can catch me at sachin@touchapp.co. You can either LinkedIn me. I'm quite active on LinkedIn. Just find me Sachin Pabari, or visit the website and just drop a message on the contact form. So yeah, those three ways are the best ways to get hold of me.
Excellent, Sachin. It's been great talking to you, and I wish you all the best with Touch, and hopefully our paths will cross again in the future.
Yeah, Bharath, it was an absolute pleasure, and thanks for giving me the time and the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like what you hear, then please subscribe. We're the Atom Ventures podcast, and you can find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, all the great podcasting sites. Please also leave a review, and if you want to get in contact, then please visit our site, atomcto.com. You can find us on LinkedIn under Atom Ventures and Atom CTO, and you can email us at info@atomcto.com.